Dave, I'm an alcoholic. And I've had the good fortune of being able to listen to some of the prior speakers each week. And that's pretty much where I'm learning everything. So I'm trying to... There's no such thing as plagiarism in AA. Because we all say things that everybody else said. I'm going to try and mix it up just a little bit here. But no, I've learned a lot by listening to this thing, and I was on my way in here tonight, and Matt said, "Are you ready?" And I said, "I guess, I don't know. I've bombed before, so we'll see what happens. You know, this is one day at a time here." I did bring a whole bunch of books for some reason. I guess that I wanted to believe I was actually doing my homework. So anyway, we are on the 10th step, which I promised last week that it's actually a two-hour step. And then I thought, oh, probably it's not. But I probably did chase a couple people off. This guy talks enough anyway. So the idea of him going over is scary. I say to people before they get up and lead, if I sponsor them or if I'm chairing, I usually tell them two things. Don't F up and don't go over. Don't go over is really the important thing. So I will not go over. Otherwise, no guarantees. So I'm searching for a way to start how I normally talk about this. You know, by the time you get to the 10th step, or as I got to the 10th step, I was fully immersed in the idea that recovery was a design for living that I thought that I could grasp hold of. Now, I will tell you that the earlier part of my recovery, and I've mentioned this in previous evenings, that I wasn't really adept at translating the steps to my life. I don't think that makes me unusual. I think what may make it a little bit unusual for me is that I spent a lot more time not doing it than doing it than I would suggest to people that I sponsor today. I just was not hurrying up through it. Part of that had to do with I wasn't paying very close attention to sponsorship. And the other part was the meetings that I attended really were meetings that were versed in you know, go to meetings and don't take your first drink. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's important, especially in the first year of recovery, that my most important thing is go to meetings and not take the first drink. But that's probably where it should have started to end, and I probably should have grabbed hold of the program and developed a program of my own as we went forward, and I truly wasn't doing that. So as a way of qualifying here, you know, I've been sober for 33 plus years. My sobriety date is November 30th, 1989. But I can say without you know, equivocation, I probably didn't really get all the way through the steps much before 15 years. Now, I've been through them 1,000 times. Don't get me wrong, 1,000. I'm exaggerating a little bit. I'm a drunk. I will embellish. I don't mean to do that. I've been through them several times. But I mean, a real investment in it didn't really come until I had reinvested myself in the program itself. And if you recall, and maybe if you don't recall, just a short synopsis, I had gone to meetings regularly for the first 5 years, and then I kind of fell off. I got remarried and a lot of other things. My life got bigger to the point that I wasn't going. Then all my misery was returned to me. And it didn't come with drinking, but it come in the form of a pretty significant dry drunk that I was on. So much so that I ended up in therapy, and the therapist sent me back to AA, which was the wisest thing that I've ever done. Was first of all, go to a therapist, because I needed outside help to take care of some of the things. Then I actually listened to her. So once I went back and discovered there was a correlation between how many meetings I attended and how much I was actually participating and how well I felt, that is when it finally occurred to me that I need to move forward with these steps. I got a new sponsor. I started working with some real diligence. I started reading it more. I was one of those guys that I've always read, The Big Book is not easy to read. I think that it's certainly full of wisdom, but it's not something that you breeze through. I clearly didn't do it early on because I couldn't comprehend. I could read all day long, but I couldn't retain anything. So now I know that this is the basic text and this is where I want to go. So when you really get to the first three steps, we all know that those are the information gathering steps, you know. And I spend a lot of time later on subjecting myself to a greater amount of the powerlessness and where we go from there and finding the power and making the three-fog decision and moving on to four and five and doing that. And so that you get to those action steps that they talk through, that goes from four to nine. And so I'm doing those to the best of my ability. And so we've concluded that last week again. And so here, we stand on the precipice of what I've heard lots of people call the maintenance steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I will say that it is not the same as 8 and 9 being a very practical practice, I should say, of making a list and making the amends wherever possible. Now we are at a place where we're going to continue what we just learned through, actually 1 through 10, but moreover, and what you read mostly is it's 4 through 9. So I've got a program of recovery. I have this design for living. I'm trying to and have removed all that I can on a daily basis that blocks me from the God of my understanding. Now I have to practically involve this in my life. Now this should come without any problem, right? That's not true, but it should come without a lot of heavy lifting. But that's not true. Not for me. Trust me, I'm not calling anybody else out on this. This is my program and how I come to understand it. And so when I get here, I understand that I can continue to take inventory and follow up and make amends immediately instead of, you know, sitting on it for, well, you know, 8, 9, 10 years and blaming somebody else for it and having a resentment or some harm done to others and worried that. So 10 says you can't do that. So it becomes this fascinating place to be in Alcoholics Anonymous. I said last week, I think it's exquisite. It really is. It's a clarifying moment in Alcoholics Anonymous. You can't get to the 10th step without recognizing that your life has changed remarkably. And now you have to maintain it. And so the very first thing I have to do is to go ahead and act on what I learned in these steps that I've got to. I mean, there's a whole set of promises that tell me that I'm gonna have before I was halfway through. And by the way, it was true. When I look back on it now, I go, well, yeah, those promises did come true to me. And then they slipped away or they did something, you know. Like it says, it's kind of an action step. They're there for a while and they're not. So you have to keep working at it. It's progress, not perfection. So here, you know, I'm now learning the idea that to do an inventory is a daily operation and it's not done at night necessarily. So one of the things that I heard early on was that you, and it says in the book, you know, you're casting up a balance sheet at the end of the day to measure out those debits and the liabilities you might have or the, you know, the assets that you might have and what went right in the day. But honestly, that's not something that I do very well. What I do, however, is do things immediately. I do not wait. If I know, and we all do, right? If I have created a problem, if I've created a harm, if I now have a resentment because something somebody else said, I know that, right? You don't get this far in this program and invested in it and not recognize, I think, that what it is that's going on. Now, I don't necessarily do it. I can do the same thing I think most people do. You have a problem, and I should only speak of myself, but there are times when I, when something has upset me and I don't know what it is. And it starts to, my behavior and how I approach other people begins to show some less than polite discourse. And I'm not comfortable with that anymore. I spend most of my time alone. I'm retired, so only the dog listens to me now. But when I wasn't, those were one of the things I had to be mindful of. You know, I at least I don't think the dog resents me, but I mean, it's entirely possible. But I really worked at trying not to do that more than anything else. But if I can't identify what it is that's bothering me, and this program will tell you this, is that you start tracking back. You start working backwards from where I am today to what I find out. Now, generally, it is going to be something that's going to be insignificant and with some distance. That might have been a hot trigger at one point. Now is only this kind of distant thing, but I carry the, whether it's resentment or anger, with me to a point that I have to, my program suffers. I'm on my 10th step and I want to know what it is that I have that's bothering me to that extent. So I'm tracking backwards. I tell guys I sponsor, track backwards. See where it is. See what it is that's bothering you. And I got to tell you, I mean, most times now, because my life is really kind of simplistic, it is really something insignificant. It really and truly is. Now, that may not be the case for other people. It's what I have found. My program says, listen, be aware of what's going on around you. Stay here, you know, between there. You know, stay in there, you know, just stay in there as much as you can. That way, if my awareness is there, I'm not going to make mistakes in relationships with people or vendors or anybody else that I might have a conversation with. I have to stay there as much as I can, and I do until I don't. And really, those are the times when I will be angry by something that somebody said that is so innocuous that it maybe all it did was embarrass me. Of course, as I've discovered over my lifetime, and I don't know about you, if I had a choice between embarrassment and getting punched in the stomach, I'll take the punch in the stomach every time. I don't want to be embarrassed. It's terrible. It hurts your pride, if you know what I mean. And sometimes it's malicious, and I don't go for bullying. And so it works badly on me. But that's not usually the case. It's not usually something that it's blatant or a trigger. It's usually something small. And whatever it is, whether it's created by another human being, or I heard it on a radio, or I read it in a book, whatever it is that I've identified, I have to go back to it and let go of it. Because I'm holding on to something that I have been taught to let go of. And so it seems minor and insignificant, but it is now something I'm carrying into my day. As I carry it into my day, if I go to a meeting, I carry it into that meeting. If I'm going to the bank, I carry it into the bank. Whatever it is that I'm doing, I'm now making others the target of my inability to let something go that I should have let go. So that's part of it. The other part is that there are times when I have, and I may repeat myself here because from earlier, when I have acted abruptly, brusquely, in an unforgiving manner to other human beings. And I didn't do that with malicious aforethought. I didn't go into the room and say, I'm going to get her tonight. That's, and I am, but I'm waiting till tomorrow. So be looking out for it. But nevertheless, I don't do that with a malicious intent. But the intent is not the issue. It's the idea that it happened. So I'll give you some quick examples. Again, I might repeat myself on these because, you know, they're stupid, so I usually use them to define me. So in the midst of, anytime I had to call DirecTV, if you've ever had to call DirecTV, or by the way, any of these places that you need for, you know, customer service, that the only way you can actually raise them is on the telephone. You can't get an answer from them otherwise. You just can't. And so the poor sons of guns who end up on the phone on the other end of this, I know that they're underpaid, and they're taking a whipping from people like me. Just an absolute soul-crushing whipping, because I'm upset about something that they can't do a darn thing about. They can't, but they're kind, right? Because, you know, they tell you right at the beginning, we're going to record this for a posterity. I don't know what they say, but they're going to record it. Now, I will tell you that in the midst of all that, over the years, I have grown much more patient, much more kind, and discovered, by the way, I get better results. But I used to feel a certain pride in the way I was able to string my words together, as if I was a debater. And the truth of the matter is, they're not debating me, they're just trying to get me to shut up. And I figured it out finally, because I wasn't getting anywhere, and quite honestly, it was embarrassing to them and to me. And so that's a behavior that I had to lessen. I had to ameliorate the way I operated. It just wasn't fair to people who were getting paid minimum wage for me to talk. And who knows where they're at? Lots of times these people are not even on the continent, you know. So that put aside. So I'm in an AA meeting. Now this is not something that I'm particularly proud of, but it happened. And shows you what happens when I got out ahead of myself. And so it is common in AA to introduce yourself and thereafter say you're an alcoholic, but it's not a requirement. When you come into the room of Alcoholics Anonymous, nobody ever says you have to say, you don't even have to say your name. You could say you're Kevin Clark. What are they going to say? You're not? Don't say Kevin Clark. Everybody knows him. But you see what I mean. You're under no requirement. They suggest you say you're there because you have a desire to stop drinking. Okay, whatever. But the fact that you say your name and you're alcoholic is not what they did at the beginning. And it's not something that they did. So a guy says to me, I don't introduce. It's a discussion meeting, and I don't say my name, and I don't say I'm an alcoholic. But I go ahead and start giving my too long a share, and he stops me, and he says, "Who are you?" And I thought, "Oh, don't do that. don't do that. I would never do that to somebody. I never stop somebody. I will bust your chops all day long before the meeting starts, but I'm not going into the meeting trying to embarrass somebody. Again, punch me in the gut, don't embarrass me." So I immediately become defensive and reminded him that he had about 2 weeks in the program, although he'd been in and out for many years. He was now sober about 2 weeks. And at that point, I'd been here nearly 20 years. I thought maybe I could get away this one time, but not saying that I was an alcoholic. Now, that wasn't necessary. It wasn't necessary. He pissed me off, yes. Did he have any right to do it? Nope. Did he know any better? Nope. Did I know he didn't know any better? Yep. I was going to punish this guy. I didn't like him much anyway. It turns out he didn't like me either. Go figure, huh? But that's just ridiculous, and that's the kind of behavior that I needed to be on board with. The worst thing about this is that not only was I wrong, I did it in a room of Alcoholics Anonymous with probably 15 to 20 people in there, all of whom I know, like we do, all looking at me askance thinking, what the heck just happened here? What kind of behavior is that? And now I'm done sharing, and I got to sit there while 15 other people share thinking, man, what an idiot. I mean, I was so far gone with my disappointment in myself that I wasn't listening to the meeting either. But what I did do, and this is what I was taught to do, and what the 10th step tells me to do. When I got back and they had concluded everybody speaking, I spoke again. At that point, I apologize, not just to the fellow who richly deserved an apology, but to the whole meeting. Now, I didn't feel good about that, but I felt like I did the right thing. And that's what the 10th step is to me. If I do that, if I have harmed somebody, the point is I have to make it right now. Not, I could have gone to the guy after the meeting and said, hey, listen, I was out of line. I'm sorry for my behavior. And it would be between him and I. And he might have been grateful for that. I have no idea. It doesn't matter. The point is, there's 15, 16 other people in this room who had to be subjected to behavior, quite honestly, that they shouldn't have been subjected to. That's on me. So I encourage people that when you have that kind of harm, which I can say gratefully I don't do that very often, and that's been a number of years ago, to immediately make the amend. And that's what the step says. Continue to take personal inventory. And when we're wrong, promptly admitted it. Now, promptly isn't 6 months from now. You know, it's not. And that puts us back to doing an inventory with the fourth step. Tenth step is, I'm living in today. I'm living right now. I made a mistake. I'm very sorry. And, you know, I don't do that on a daily basis, but it is in my quiver. I can pull that out. I can use that. And it will, in fact, make me a better person. All I got to do is exercise that kind of, you know, part of the program to make sure that I'm making things whole. Now, I want to say that I use the 10th step on a daily basis, and I think that I do, because it's a big enough and broad enough step that continuing with an inventory is an important process. And there's a lot of things, even in a guy's life who honestly has pretty sedate and, you know, calm life at this point, where I am still up and I'm still interacting with people and I'm still living a life, that I want to make sure that I stay focused on what it is that I'm saying, not to take care of, you know, I don't want to create additional difficulties. Now, if you know me personally, you know that part of what I've always struggled with in this program, and I'll tell you again, I probably said it already, the pillars that I build my program on, honesty and humility. Now, one I had none of, and the other I didn't have a nodding acquaintance of. So, in other words, none of this come easy to me. Humility is not something, people don't run around and say, you know, I know Dave, and I think he's a really humble guy. It's not something people say to me. My responsibility with that is to not act beyond what I know my personality wants to take me. I'm with you. I don't necessarily know how people view me. I know what it's like from the inside out. I don't know what it looks like coming the other direction. My responsibility is to be perceptive enough and to be aware enough that my conduct does not create any kind of harm to others. Now, you know, I'm not a vicious guy and I'm not mean. I wasn't a mean drunk. And I was too small to be a fighter. I'm heavier, much heavier than I was as a drinker. But, man, you don't get in fist fights when you can't reach the guy. You know, that's just not the idea. So my problem has never been that I was going to get physically aggressive. I mean, I was a terrible husband, but I wasn't abusive. I just was absent. You know, I wasn't a good father. I was absent. Those are the things I needed to correct. I didn't fight people because I didn't have the wherewithal to do it. But what I could do, and I can still do, is that I can be cynical, and I can be judgmental, and I can be unkind. And I don't like that. I don't like that about myself. And I know that when I catch myself doing it, I'm disappointed in how I've acted. Now, I have, if I repeat it, I'm sorry, but a couple of years ago, almost 4 years ago now, I retired. Again, I'd actually retired before, but went back to work and I retired again. And part of the reason I retired this time is I wanted to complete a section hike of the Appalachian Trail. And my older brother was doing it at the same time. And we had made this plan to hike the last part, the last leg, through the upper reaches of New Hampshire and into Maine, which, by the way, if you ever want to do a hike that's challenging but clearly beautiful, go there. I mean, the Appalachian Trail itself has all this history, and it's a wonderful place. Honestly, the most spectacular part of it's the last two states, which is New Hampshire and Maine. So my brother is my older brother now, so that means there's a, you know, what birth order issues, and he's also about 2.5 years older than me. So, you know, until I'm 8 or 9 years old, he's also one of the bosses, right? So, so whatever he says had to go, and he beat me at everything, and I, you know, genuinely hated him. But we're gonna make this hike, and this guy is always my brother, and he's dear to me, but he's terribly judgmental sometimes. And this is a conversation I've had with him, so I'm not taking his inventory. He lives in Wyoming, he probably never hear it anyway. But he's also kind of negative. But it's moreover part of the family dynamic. It's that cynicism, and that there's a negative part of us. And some of it's uproariously funny. I mean, it's, you know, as long as it's not you get picked on, right? And so I made this plan because, although I love my brother, I didn't want to buy into the stuff that I know was where our conversations were going to be about. And it's true. I thought, he's going to, and he did. So in my mind, for 30 straight days, I'm saying prayers to not make judgment, and not to complain. And I'm saying it out loud to myself. Don't complain. Don't make judgment. Don't complain. I mean, I'm dead serious about this. So this goes on for 30 days. What a wonderful experience. Again, painful, but certainly worthwhile. I don't think I'll do it again, but it's certainly worthwhile. At the conclusion of this, I discovered that the link between not complaining and not judging equals gratitude. I never thought that. I didn't know that. It's probably written in there, to be honest with you. Probably lots of people could have told me, but I didn't know it. But try it. It was fascinating to me. At the end of this thing, I felt a greater sense of peace and gratitude for whatever it was. You know, the fact that it was done, I was grateful, but I was also grateful for, you know, all the things in my life to a greater extent. And I thought, I didn't think that was going to be a consequence of my behavior, but it was. And so in there is the 10th step. I mean, in there is I was doing an inventory on a regular basis. I was staying right with it the way I had been instructed to do so. And then I discovered that it freaking works. It works. Now, why that would be a surprise to me, I don't know. But sometimes, and I don't know how it goes for you, when you finally do what everybody tells you to do and it works, you go, oh, I didn't think that would work. It doesn't matter that it works for everybody you've ever met. But I don't know where that came from, but okay. And of course, then the guy like me, the very next part of that is, I wonder how I did that. Really, the mistake, that's where I'm not living with any kind of perspective. That's where I'm not living with that 10th step. I am not aware. So, there's part of what Sandy Beach said about the 10th step. There's so much of this, by the way. By the way, does everybody know what axiom means? Because, you know, there's an axiom. No, see. Okay, so let's call it axiomatic that if there's anything wrong in my life that is, you know, that's going on. If I'm unsettled or I'm it's apparent. It's easily apparent that it's my fault that I have to look for, right? The 10th step tells us that I have to look for me in that. Nobody else. I can't blame anybody. Barb. I can blame Barb. And I'm going to. And but she probably won't accept it, and I wouldn't blame her. But you see what I mean? I have to be responsible. If there's something going on in my life that's unsettling to me, that doesn't mean that it's not going on. What it means is I have to find my part in it. Because there's, I mean, if I'm just upset, that's my part in it, right? If I didn't do anything, but I'm angry about it, that's my part in it. And then I have to be aware of that. And then I have to exercise the 10th step on it. I have to inventory it. I have to make sure that I am not at fault. Or if I am, to make that amend. So I started mentioning Sandy Beach. And Sandy Beach, most of you are probably aware of Sandy Beach, but he was kind of an iconic AA guy and out of Florida. And a great story. Died at a meeting. Nearly 50 years sober, and he was still teaching us. And he goes to the meeting, and next, as he passes away, I think they're talking about the third step. I hope it wasn't about the frogs. But he said, listen, the 10th step is not hard to put into action. There's really only two branches of this thing. If there's something going on, you have two choices. Right? Something going on, one branch is, it's my fault, I need to make the amend. So there's an awareness that I did something wrong, I need to make the amend. I need to make the person whole, whatever that means, to the best of my ability. Or, I forgive. Because I'm not going to ask somebody else to make an amend to me, am I? I'm not going to go and say, well, you know, the program that I follow means that you have to come and tell me you're sorry. It's not going to happen. If it's to somebody else in the program, there's a likelihood that if they've created something that has hurt you, they probably will come back and say, listen, that was my fault, I'm sorry. Failing that, of course, all of us are going to run into circumstances where we're going to be either the direct or indirect victim, and that's a tough word, it's not really all that much, but of somebody else's behavior. It happens. It happens in the workplace all the time. You know, there's very little you can do about it. What are you going to do? You forgive. Because if not, it builds into the resentment, builds into anger, builds into frustration, and we all know what the death sentence says in AA. We can't afford that. We'll go back out, and to drink is to die. And so, I take this very seriously. I'm going to make sure that if somebody harms me in some way, which by the way doesn't happen, thank God, for the most part, I'm prepared to forgive. Because I recognize that I'm going to have to live with this one way or the other. I would much rather live in recovery and in gratitude and in forgiveness than in anger and fear. I don't want to live there anymore. I lived there. It wasn't as comfortable as you think. So, oh, crap, sorry. It is 2 hours. Self-evident truth, John, just so you know. Axiom means self-evident truth. I would only say to people, as I was reading today, it occurred to me that as we come into the 10th step, right out of the 9th step, and you read that paragraph, at the bottom of the paragraph it says, love and tolerance of others is our code. That's a great thing to say, isn't it? How wonderful is that? Our code is love and tolerance of others. I tell guys that all the time. I mean, what a relief. There's a code, and it's written down. And then the 10th step promises follow. And I don't know why I didn't think about this, but in that paragraph, it talks about us no longer being saddled with the difficulties that we had. If we turn away from alcohols, we're neutral. We've entered into the sunlight of the Spirit, I'm not going to read it to you. It's in there. I bet everybody here has it outlined or highlighted in their book. Anyway, I'll finish. When I get here, I want emotional balance. That's a big deal in AA. And it's not something that's in the big book, by the way. It's something, though, they talked about in 12 and 12. that the emotional balance is, that's what we're working on now. I don't want the emotional hangover. Anybody want that? So try not to get that. Try to find balance. Say you're sorry when you should. Forgive when you don't have to. I'll pass.
All right. Thanks, David.
Sorry about that.
Thanks, Dave. Now, if anybody has a question, go ahead and get to the microphone.
Thank you. Shayna, alcoholic.
Hi, Shayna.
So now this makes a lot of sense to me, because I'm going on my fifth month here, and when I first came in here, I remember coming back to the rooms, and people would be like, I'm sorry that I said that, whatever, and I'd be like, oh, that's fine, I don't care. And I thought, oh, well, these people worry about a lot of things. But now I get it, and I guess I'm wondering in my head, how do you know, because I overthink stuff to the, like, I'm working on that every single day. Like, how do you know when you actually harm someone? Like, because I get on, like, step four, where you, like, talk to your sponsor, and step five, like, to know when you're getting down to step nine, like, whether or not you're actually going to make amends in person, or whether that's not something that's, whether that's harmful or not, because you'll have the guide of your sponsor to kind of work with and God. But then how do you know, just impromptu, whether or not it's something that you want to actually make amends for in that moment or not?
Well, here's what I suggest, and it's what I do, is that I do the inventory. I make sure that whether this is the spot check inventory, I do it. I don't usually do it at night. I really have never made that a habit, but I do it anytime during the day where I feel like there might be something that I'm missing. And I have to weigh that against what I know in this program. I need to know that my efforts are to harm no one. Of intolerance of others is my responsibility. I don't know that we always know that we've harmed people. At least I've had to think about it later, or I've had other people come and tell me. So here's what I say. If someone comes and tells you, you might want to think about it, but you might not know. And yeah. I think that comes with time. I do. Just so you know, that you know, one of the worst sayings I've ever heard in AA is time takes time. Until I can say it. You know what? Time takes time.
It does. Because yeah, everyone who's apologized to me, I'm like, no one, they didn't harm me at all. Like, I'm thinking to myself, like, if I thought about it enough, I mean, I'd be apologizing all the time. I'd be like, sorry, I'm like, you know, so I don't want to be that person.
No. And AA doesn't want you to be that person. And it says in our book that we shouldn't be that person. We make an effort. We make an effort, and an honest effort, and to right our wrongs.
So
but we do not grovel.
Time takes time. By the time I get to step 10, kind of know.
Yeah, you'll know.
You'll know.
Thank you for being here. Thank you for the question.
Who else has a question for Dave? And if you're on Zoom, feel free to just go ahead and speak up when you have the opportunity. Anybody have a question?
I got a question.
All right.
I do too. So early to get out.
Yeah. Hi, Dave. Brian, alcoholic.
Hey, what?
Can you talk about emotional balance a little bit more?
Yep. Great question.
Because balance is nothing. It's never completely balanced, at least based on my experience. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, I know exactly what you mean. If you look. If you look in our literature, you don't really get anything mentioning about this in the early part of, you know, AA was created to get people sober. And that's what the big book does. But, like I said, when we got 15 years down the road, it became a larger picture. At that point, as when Bill was saying, this isn't a drinking problem, this is a thinking problem. Now, I don't think that there's an easy road necessarily to emotional balance. I don't think that you get there without a little bit of experimentation or some you know, problems. I don't know that, I live a very balanced life at this point, but it's easy for me to say that. I've not only been around for a while and actually use this program to live by, which is by the grace of God, it's no fault of my own, it's what I do, but I have very little responsibilities, which unlike younger people like yourself, you're saddled with a tremendous amount of them. And so there are times that, depending on what kind of life you're living, there are significant issues on a daily basis that you have to deal with. The problem is if I was not in recovery, my very first instinct would be to be defensive and angry if things weren't going my way. And of course I would be casting blame. So in order to find some balance in that, I had to be aware of what my behaviors are, and I had to practice the idea that my intent is never malicious, nor is it intended to create harm for anybody. Now, that's a lot of words, but really it comes down to just being aware and not overreacting. And then if you do, use that 10th step and go back and say, geez, I'm sorry. That'll retain or send you back onto the path of balance. It's not as though you can't get it. But early on, you know, and when I say early on, I mean in the first 10 years, some of that's hard to do just because there's so many things coming at us and a lot of changes. And so, I don't live every day balanced, but I can get there. So I'm sure you get there.
Thank you.
Yep.
Thanks, Dave. But am I making the recording correct? Okay. Thanks, Dave. I'm Leslie, alcoholic. And what I was wanted to ask you about was this. You know, I've also heard step 10 described as a growth step.
Yeah.
And, you know, used to help me, each of us, but me, I guess I'll talk about me, to see, you know, do I have some character defect at play? Am I being selfish or self-centered? Maybe just beyond balance, but, you know, has that changed for you maybe over the course of time, you know, getting past the basic cruise control into growth, or am I just,
is it
a dumb question?
So, no, it's an excellent question, and more of a statement, I guess, because I would agree with you. That's I think is part of what happens. All those things that we are, if we don't are not careful, come roaring back to us. So the 10th step teaches us how to keep that away. I mean, I've heard it said in a lot of different ways, but one of the best I've ever heard is that, you know, your addiction's outside doing push-ups. He's waiting for you to make that slip, or she, whatever. I think yes. There's a significant amount of growth in the 10th step. They don't say it's an action step, but God's honest truth, it is. It's an action that I have to take on a regular basis. Now, it's not the same as an 8th and 9th step, but it's clearly action. And let's face it, without action, we're not moving forward. And I'm a big believer in that, you know, recovery is as thin as a dime. You're either progressing in your recovery or you're regressing. And so I want to believe that each day that I'm working on this, I am moving forward. And I don't ever know that it comes in leaps and bounds. But like you're saying, the 10th step provides me with another part of my education. So I'd agree with you. So it's a great statement. Thank you.
Well, thank you.
Paige, alcoholic. You shared with us tonight that for the first 15 years of your time in recovery, you didn't really work the steps in any depth.
Yeah.
And you mentioned that when you first came in, you heard a lot of, well, just go to meetings and don't pick up the first one.
Yeah.
Looking back at when you first came in and now, do you think there has been a change in emphasis on doing the steps?
Yeah, my personal observation is that I moved here about 15 years ago. to West County. I lived in Meadville before I left. I lived in Crawford County most of my life. And one of the reasons I wanted to move to West County is because of the AA that's present here. It's good. I knew that because prior to moving here, I'd come up here to the Joe McHugh a couple of times. And I become enamored of the idea that this is an area that really works hard at incorporating the steps into the recovery, which is a challenge, and it's also what I want. I want to learn. I got so much to learn. I spent 3 or 4 hours today reading and listening to people and thinking, boy, I hope I can say something intelligent tonight, listen to other people. So yeah, I don't know what it's like where I started out. I hope that it's better. It's certainly better here. And I would never, ever, if I move from here, which I may, I'd never want to live someplace where it doesn't have this kind of commitment to the steps. And moreover, traditions and concepts too. So things that define our entire program, all three legs of it. That's what I want to know. No thanks, Paige. Are you going to tell me something's axiomatic, John?
Hi, everyone. My name is John. I'm an alcoholic. Dave, earlier in your presentation tonight, you mentioned that there was premeditation and then on the other side, gratitude. What were the other two legs? You mentioned gratitude or premeditation.
John, I'm going to be honest with you. You're going to have to go listen because. And thank you for the question, John, okay, but I really, really don't have the memory to snatch that back. So, but thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Well, I think that does it, Dave. Thank you
very much. Thank you.